Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Community leaders are stepping up to the plate to speak out and take action after a study found elevated levels of electric magnetic frequencies, or EMFs, in Alpine along the route of the Underground Sunrise Power Link. New measurements have been taken at an elementary school by the County Board of Education, and we'll have some details. Supervisor Jacob wants a state investigation, and local planners are also raising questions. Meanwhile, SDG&E has responded with additional information and a promise to take free measurements for any residents with concerns. Plus, we've dug into the research to tell you what medical experts have to say on EMF exposure in children, so be sure to stay tuned. Also today, we'll have some news on possible drought relief for Helix Water District customers. And then on our health report, hear about a link found between heartburn or antacid medications and Alzheimer's disease. Plus, learn about a theory raised by some doctors who suggest that birth defects in Brazil blamed on Zika virus just might have another cause, a chemical put in drinking water to kill mosquito larvae. On our Capitol Report today, we'll tell you why a local congressman thinks vaping or e-cigarettes should be legal on airplanes and how his colleagues actually voted. There's some good news for baseball fans. The next All-Star game will be played right here in San Diego. We'll have more in sports. Then on Destination East County, hear about some amazing events coming up across our region, from a moonlight hike in the desert to a 24-hour run around Lake Cuyamaca and a fitness walk in Santee for outdoor enthusiasts. Music lovers can delight in an early musical instrument concert, or for country fans, the Emmy Award-winning Larry Gatlin and the Gatlin Brothers will be live in concert here. Plus, we'll have previews of the Circle of Art show in Borrego Springs, talks by local authors at libraries, a Black History Month event, and a Waterwise Gardens tour, and more. Our newsmaker interview today is with Victor Crosswaite Contreras, a descendant of a famous early San Diegan. He'll be talking about Twain Fest in Old Town and a contest sponsored with Write Out Loud for first-person monologues, bringing stories to life about real people from our region's colorful history during the 1800s. Learn how you can enter. And as a special treat, Victor will be performing a monologue featuring his own famous ancestor, Bonifacio Lopez, known as El Rey, back when the cattle industry was king in the San Diego region. And finally, for Heart Health Month, we'll also have some news on why heart attacks are now the number two killer in San Diego County and what you should do to protect your heart health. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The Alpine community is voicing concerns after a study found some high electromagnetic frequency, or EMF, levels along Alpine Boulevard, where the Sunrise Power Link high-voltage 500-kilowatt line is buried. The study was conducted by engineer Robbie Faulkner and contractor Michael Milligan. They reported finding that EMF levels were higher at all areas measured than before the power link was built. Some medical studies have found EMF levels higher than 0.4 microteslas may be linked to an increase in childhood leukemia, although other studies have been inconclusive. Of particular concern were EMFs measuring 0.43 microtesla in front of Alpine Elementary School. Also, a measurement of over 2 microtesla was found at the site of the proposed Alpine High School. That's several times higher than the 0.25 level recommended by the Environmental Protection Agency as generally considered safe. The study's authors suggested in a recent letter that Alpine's children be tested annually for leukemia, and that has sparked community-wide concern. Alpine planners, school officials, and SDG&E have all weighed in with responses to publication of the authors' letters and study results, which were first published in the Alpine Sun, with highlights and additional information later published in East County Magazine and the Alpine Community Network. Alpine Union High School District Superintendent Bruce Cochran has sent a letter to parents reporting that at the district's request, the San Diego Board of Education has now sent an expert out to take measurements in and near the Alpine Elementary School. He says those results show levels well below the EPA recommended limit. The district and the County Board of Education are hiring an independent analyst to survey the rates to help provide the community assurance in the face of conflicting reports about EMF levels, the superintendent says. He adds that according to the National Institute of Health, or NIH, there is a weak association between measured fields and childhood leukemia, and he said it's not clear whether that represents a cause and effect relationship. Alpine Community Planning Group board member George Barnett recalls that concerns over EMFs were raised during the project's environmental impact report but were dismissed by the California Public Utilities Commission. To address community concerns, last month the Alpine Community Planning Group reviewed the matter and requested the county health officials to quickly follow up. It also asked the county to intervene with the Public Utilities Commission and SDG&E. Supervisor Diane Jacob has written a letter to the California Public Utilities Commission calling for a state investigation into the EMF levels in Alpine. Jacob was one of the early warning voices on this issue before the power line was built. SDG&E issued a statement from Public Affairs Manager Don Parent indicating that the company is committed to providing safe, reliable, and environmentally sound gas and electric service while relying on internationally recognized scientific groups such as the World Health Organization and independent regulatory advisory groups that have conducted scientific reviews and health research literature to guide the company regarding its decisions on EMFs. The utility company maintains that science has been unable to determine if there are health effects from EMF exposure, but says it does recognize concerns of customers and is taking proactive measures to lower EMF levels and provide free EMF services and information for customers. SDG&E points out that it's unclear whether their underground transmission line is the only source of these readings, since EMFs can be emitted by household items, too, and sometimes at higher level than values cited. For instance, a microwave oven, even from a foot away, could create a magnetic field of 4 to 8 microtesla. Cell phones, hair dryers, and electrical lines are among other common sources of EMFs in homes. It's also important to note that magnetic fields weaken the farther that one moves away from the source, so high levels at the street right over the power link don't necessarily mean a high risk inside the buildings nearby. The Alpine Sun editor has told us that measurements in her office, located along Alpine Boulevard, were low and within levels that she believes are safe. Sunrise PowerLink is a 500-kilowatt line. An article published in the British Columbia Medical Journal in 2008 in Canada states that it has been found that exposure greater than range of 0.3 to 0.4 microtesla lead to a doubling in the risk of leukemia, but with very little risk below that level. This exposure range is approximately equal to a distance of 60 meters from a high-voltage power line of 500 kilovolts. However, underground power lines tend to spike higher directly above the buried line and then drop off more quickly in the EMF levels as the distance from the line increases. So the safe distance from PowerLink in Alpine could be much closer than those listed by the Canadian researchers, since it is buried. Sunrise PowerLink is underground in Alpine, but above ground for most of the rest of the route, and it's unclear what the EMF levels may be in other communities. SDG&E has advised us that it has taken the following steps so far to address EMF concerns: maintaining an EMF center with representatives to talk with customers, providing free magnetic field measurements upon request for customers, providing customers with what SDG&E says is objective EMF health literature, funding and monitoring EMF research, participating in discussion forums and regulatory proceedings, and reducing EMF on new or upgraded electric facilities. SDG&E cites the World Health Organization, the National Academy of Sciences, the National Radiological Protection Board in England, and the California Department of Public Health among entities that have done major reviews and report that the data does not demonstrate exposure to power frequency magnetic fields causes cancer or other health risks, although the possibility cannot be dismissed, according to Don Parent, the spokesman for SDG&E. More research is recommended and ongoing worldwide. Currently, there is no health-based state or federal government standard for long-term EMF exposure. We took a look at some of the studies that have been done. In the 1990s, most EMF studies focused on very low frequency exposures, and some found a weak association between EMF field strength and increased risk of childhood cancer, according to the National Institute of Health, which said no evidence of such a link has been found for adults so far. It's unclear whether all the studies accounted for other variables or not, and it's also unclear who paid for those studies or whether any question of impartiality could arise, given that utilities, including SDG&E, have funded some EMF research. Here is a summary of some of the studies that did find links or potential links between EMFs and childhood cancers. A study in 1979 found some children living near power lines had double the risk of leukemia when exposed to 0.4 microteslas or more, with lesser elevated risks at lower levels. Later studies had mixed results, with some finding no link and others showing a risk, according to cancer.gov. A pooled analysis published in the British Journal of Cancer in 2000 found a twofold increase in leukemia risk in children with the highest exposure over 0.4 microtesla, while another analysis combining data from 15 studies found a similar increase in risk in children with the very highest exposure level, Epidemiology reported in 2000. In 2005, the British Medical Journal reported a study in which nearly 30,000 pairs of children in the United Kingdom, where children lived in homes up to 600 meters from power lines, had an elevated risk of leukemia. An increased risk of 69% for leukemia was found for children living within 200 meters of power lines, while a risk increase of 23% was found for those living within 200 to 600 meters of the lines. The British Columbia Medical Journal in Canada in 2008 cited a possible moderate risk of brain cancer that cannot be excluded at 0.3 or 0.4 microtesla. But the World Health Organization lists EMFs as only a possible carcinogen. And some sources argue that there may be no risk at all. So, what does all of this really mean? If you're an Alpine resident, it does not mean your town is unsafe or that it's time to pack up and move away. If you live or work very close to the buried power line and you have concerns, you can ask to have measurements taken at your home or business by SDG&E or an independent consultant. This is probably a wise idea for pregnant women and families with young children, although the likelihood is that most levels will fall within the EPA threshold of what is considered safe. You may want to avoid repeated strolls directly atop the buried power line, and you can also reduce your EMF exposure to other sources, which can include everything from cell phones to GPS devices to microwave ovens, as we mentioned earlier. We've asked SDG&E what actions it would consider taking if the levels are found above the EPA thresholds in areas where Alpine residents live, work, and go to school. We've also inquired what shielding methods were used on the power link beneath Alpine Boulevard and if any additional protections should be considered. We're also awaiting the San Diego County Office of Education's independent analysis of the new readings taken at the Alpine Elementary School, and we will report back when we receive responses to these and other questions. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Relief from drought cutbacks may be in sight for Helix water users. On February 11th, the state adopted new regulations to reduce conservation mandates for water agencies that have taken steps to boost local water supplies. Under the state's new guidelines, Helix Water District is expected to get a credit for water bought from the new Carlsbad desalinization plant, as well as relief due to high inland temperatures. That could reduce the district's conservation mandate for reducing its water use to 12% instead of 20% during the summer months. The district does have to apply for the reduction, which would be in effect through October if approved. Helix customers have done their part, reducing the district's water use by 23% compared to 2013, far exceeding the governor's 20% required reduction for the district. If the restrictions on water use are eased, next up, the board could consider easing or eliminating financial penalties on water users who go over the monthly limit. Welcome relief for homeowners struggling to keep trees and other landscaping alive with hot weather already arriving in East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report from the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. Zika virus has been the main culprit suspected in thousands of cases of babies in Brazil born with microcephaly, a condition that causes small skulls and underdeveloped brains. But now a group of doctors and researchers in Argentina have published a report suggesting another possible cause, the chemical pyriproxifen, a larvicide made by a Monsanto subsidiary that has been applied to drinking water supplies in Brazil to control mosquitoes. Doctors at the University Network of Environment and Health note that while Zika has been around for a long time, the birth defects in Brazil are new. Zika previously never was associated with birth defects, even in areas where 75% of the population had contracted Zika. Pyriproxifen is relatively new in Brazil, applied in response to the growing number of mosquito-borne illnesses such as dengue fever and Zika. This physician's group suggests that instead of larvicides, cleaning up standing water and releasing mosquito-eating fish may be better, safer alternatives. At least one state in Brazil has suspended use of pyriproxifen due to the doctor's group's report. Now, you may be wondering if this larvicide could be in our water, so East County Magazine contacted Helix Water District to ask whether pyriproxifen or any other larvicide is applied to drinking water here. Mark Humphreys responded that larvicides are not used here, adding, "The chloramine residual we maintain would inhibit insect and microorganism growth. Chloramine has been used in the Helix District at low levels since the 1980s with no reported ill effects," he added. Some prominent experts are not persuaded of a larvicide microcephaly link. Scott Weaver, head of the Institute for Human Infections and Immunity at the University of Texas, said at a workshop on Zika hosted by the National Academy of Sciences earlier this week, "I think there's very limited application of larvicide, especially in the poor communities in Brazil where a lot of these cases are occurring." The Washington Post reports that Albert Koh, who chairs Yale's School of Public Health, Department of Epidemiology and Microbial Diseases, notes that larvicide in Brazil has been applied mostly in rural areas, not the heavily populated urban cities where Zika started in Brazil. Yet another theory making the rounds on the Internet, based on a single blog post, suggests that genetically modified mosquitoes released in Brazil could be responsible for the birth defects there, noting that Zika outbreaks have occurred in many countries, but so far, the microcephaly cases have been nearly entirely limited to Brazil or to travelers who went to Brazil. But so far, no credible experts have stepped forward to support the theory of the genetically modified mosquitoes being behind Zika. Only a small number of women who gave birth to microcephalic infants tested positive for Zika. However, Zika can only be measured in the bloodstream for about a month, and many of the women did report having Zika-like symptoms such as rash, fever, and red eyes earlier in their pregnancies. A major study is now underway in Colombia on several thousand pregnant women who contracted Zika to try and find answers as to whether Zika, which has been measured in amniotic fluid, is actually causing the brain-damaged babies, and if so, can it be transmitted during all stages of pregnancy or not? Expectant mothers with Zika virus in South and Central America face some tough choices. Microcephaly causes permanent brain damage. However, it does not show up on ultrasounds until fairly late in a pregnancy, when abortion is illegal in much of Latin America. Researchers are also studying a possible link between Zika and Guillain-Barré syndrome, which has been found in a growing number of Zika patients in multiple places, including in adults. 50 cases of Zika have been diagnosed in the United States, but all of those cases so far were contracted outside of the U.S., with the exception of Puerto Rico, where Zika has been transmitted, and one case in Texas, where a traveler's partner got Zika through sexual contact. The World Health Organization has declared a global emergency to combat Zika virus and work toward developing a vaccine, but that is still considered to be several years away. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention earlier this month issued their highest level of alert over the prospect of Zika gaining a toehold in the U.S. President Barack Obama has asked for extra funding to combat Zika. In the United States, Zika is not considered likely to become a major epidemic, fortunately, since cold winters in most of North America would kill the Aedes mosquitoes that carry the disease. Aedes mosquitoes have recently been found in San Diego, where it's warm for much of the year, however, so residents are asked to clean up standing water that could provide breeding grounds for these tiny pests.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
The House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee has passed an amendment that would impose a federal ban on vaping e-cigarettes on all airlines in the U.S. Congressman Duncan Hunter, who took over $10,000 in tobacco industry campaign contributions this election cycle, opposed the amendment, even lighting up during the hearing and puffing a cloud of vapor to make his point. Hunter said vaping is helping him to quit smoking. He insisted that vaping poses no hazard to others. Quote, "There's no combustion, there are no carcinogens, there is nothing noxious about this whatsoever," he attested. But in fact, vaping devices do contain multiple carcinogens. Many have nicotine, which has a long and well-documented history of harmful health impacts. Poison control centers also report a dramatic increase in nicotine poisoning among children due to e-cigarettes, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported last April. But even those devices with only flavored water vapor contain propylene glycol, which, when according to ABC's MedWatch, when vaped, turns into formaldehyde. Formaldehyde is an embalming fluid and known carcinogen, NBC News reports. Some e-cigarettes and other vaping devices also contain other toxins and cancer-causing chemicals. Vaping also poses entirely new risks beyond those posed by smoking tobacco. Science News, in a February 12, 2016 article, reports that new animal studies show vaping poses reproductive risks for children of women exposed to vaping during pregnancy, altering activity in the baby's brains. Vaping smoke also caused reproductive problems in males exposed to e-cig vapors in the womb, cutting sperm levels in half, among other problems. Researchers found vaping may also raise immunity risks. Health authorities worry also that tobacco marketers are using vaping to entice kids to start smoking. Industry health expert John W. Ayers at San Diego State University, co-author of the Internet Tobacco Vendor Study, states in a press release issued by SDSU on February 11th, quote, "Big tobacco has largely taken over the e-cigarette industry. Alongside unchecked marketing and advertising, e-cigarettes have exploded online," unquote. The researchers also found little evidence to support the claim that e-cigarettes are safe or effective as a means of helping smokers quit the habit. Another risk is explosions and fires caused by vaping devices, typically due to using incompatible chargers. The U.S. Fire Administration, in an October 2014 report for FEMA, documented at least 25 fires in the U.S. caused by e-cigarettes. Most were on chargers when the explosions occurred, often on unauthorized charging units. The USFA warns, quote, "The shape and construction of e-cigarettes can make them more likely than other products with lithium-ion batteries to behave like flaming rockets when a battery fails," unquote. Thus, Republican Hunter's claim that vaping poses no dangers to others is quite simply not true, according to medical and safety experts. Fortunately for the safety of passengers and crew, most major airlines already ban vaping on planes. The House committee was not swayed by Hunter's puffing in the hearing and voted to pass the amendment that, if enacted, would ban smoking e-cigarettes or other vaping devices on all commercial airlines. Hunter is not the first local politician to light up over a proposed e-cigarette ban. During last year's hearing in La Mesa on an e-cigarette ban, Councilwoman Christy Alessio violated a city ban on smoking in the public building. She lit up an e-cigarette, sending then-Councilman Ernest Ewan, who is allergic, scrambling out of the council seating area. La Mesa later voted to ban e-cigarettes in all places where tobacco is banned, following a similar law enacted by El Cajon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barana.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Ed Barena with a health report. If you're taking medication for heartburn or acid reflux disease, here's some important information you may want to know. You could be dramatically raising your risk of developing dementia, such as Alzheimer's disease. A new study has found that the risk of developing dementia increased by 44% among older patients taking popular brands of heartburn medications. The study was conducted by doctors at the German Center for Neurodegenerative Diseases and was published this week in JAMA Neurology, a medical journal published by the American Medical Association. The drugs are in a class known as proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs. They work by reducing stomach acid. PPIs include popular brand names such as Prilosec, Nexium, and Prevacid. The study compared patients age 75 or older who regularly took the medications to patients in the same age group who did not take the drugs. Also troubling, an earlier study found a link between dementia and a second class of heartburn medications known as H2 blockers. H2 blocking medications include Zantac, Pepcid, and Tagamet. The studies looked at data for thousands of patients. Researchers could not determine conclusively whether the drugs cause development of Alzheimer's, however, and researchers say clinical studies are needed. The findings are particularly disturbing in the United States, where concerns have previously been raised by medical experts who say many doctors are overprescribing heartburn medications or antacids to treat minor cases of acid reflux. A study published in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine found that up to 70% of PPI prescriptions in the United States are not necessary, and even 25% of long-term users could quit taking the medications without having heartburn reoccur. Besides potentially increasing the risk of Alzheimer's, PPI overuse can also raise the risk of chronic kidney disease by 20 to 50%, the same study found. How might heartburn medications impede cognitive abilities? PPIs can cause vitamin B12 deficiency. They may also impact levels of proteins that are linked to Alzheimer's disease, CBS News reports. So how can you reduce heartburn without resorting to potentially risky medications? Experts say you can try eating smaller meals, avoid consuming caffeine, spicy foods, and chocolate, and remain upright for several hours after every meal.
This is Liz Alper with a sports report for East County Magazine here on KNSJ. The last time San Diego hosted the MLB All-Star Game, it was in 1992. Qualcomm Stadium was still Jack Murphy Stadium, and George H.W. Bush was president. But now, the All-Star Game is back in San Diego, and this time, it will be held in the heart of downtown at Petco Park. The All-Star Fan Fest at the Convention Center will be from July 8th to July 12th. On July 10th, it's All-Star Sunday at the ballpark, featuring the All-Star Futures Game and the Celebrity Softball Game. That's not what everyone looks forward to about All-Star time, though. The Home Run Derby will be held on Monday, July 11th, and the All-Star Game will be held on Tuesday, July 12th.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Leon Thompson.
And this is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County, which includes a harpsichord and violin concert at Cuyamaca College by the San Diego Early Music Society, an author speaking on San Diego legends, and an open artist studio tour in Borrego Springs.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including a concert by country music stars the Gatlin Brothers, a moonlight hike in the Anza Borrego Desert, an all-night run and walk at Pirate's Cove along Lake Cuyamaca's shores, the La Mesa Chamber's Mardi Gras, and a salute to local heroes, plus a St. Patrick's Day weekend run and walk in downtown El Cajon to benefit local charities. So stay tuned for all these events and more.
Jack Innes, an award-winning local journalist and author, has made an extensive study of San Diego's fascinating and often quirky history. He'll be speaking about his latest book, San Diego Legends, in two upcoming appearances. You can meet Jack at the Fletcher Hills Library on Saturday, February 20th at 2 p.m. or at the Santee Library on Saturday, February 27th at 1 p.m.
Seroptimus International of Borrego Springs will host an artist open studio tour on Sunday, February 21st from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. with a reception to follow at the Borrego Art Institute from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Light refreshments will be served. This self-guided tour will visit studios of some of the most talented artists in the Borrego Springs area. Art will be displayed in a variety of media and styles. All artists will be on hand to show their work and explain their creative techniques, and some will have live demonstrations. For tickets and a map with brochure, visit borrego.wix.com/seroptimus or check our calendar on eastcountymagazine.org for that link.
The San Diego Early Music Society will present Lena Tourbonnet on violin and Kenneth Weiss on harpsichord on Sunday, February 21st, at 3 p.m. in the Cuyamaca College Performing Arts Theater in El Cajon. The concert will feature Baroque music of Jacques de la Guerre as well as sonatas by Vivaldi and solo harpsichord works by Marchand and Scarlatti. For more information, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
Hawkwatch, a free celebration of raptors, continues at the Wildlife Research Institute in Ramona Grasslands at 10 a.m. each Saturday in February, rain or shine. You can observe both wintering and resident raptors, including eagles, hawks, falcons, and owls. 19 species of raptors have been recorded at this raptor hotspot, where you will learn the life histories of these beautiful birds, as well as the importance of the Ramona grassland ecosystem. In addition to wild raptors, you will also see trained raptors and owls up close. Bring binoculars if you have them, though scopes will be available. For more information, visit wildliferesearch.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Anza Borrego Natural History Foundation invites you to take a full moon nighttime walk through South Palm Watch on Monday, February 22nd from 6:30 to 9 p.m. You'll experience the unique and serene beauty of moonlight on the canyon walls as Education Director Mike McElhattan leads the easy one-mile walk. Meet at the Anza Borrego Natural History Foundation office, and you can carpool from there, since four-wheel drive is needed for a short section of the wash. Bring a flashlight, water, and good hiking shoes if you go. The moonlight hike is free, but reservations are requested. For more information, you can visit the Anza Borrego Natural History Foundation website at abnhf.org.
Author Mimi Kirk is known for her juicy books. No, we're not talking about steamy novels. The health food expert's books include The Ultimate Book of Juicing, Live Raw, and Live Raw Around the World. She'll be giving a presentation at the Lakeside Library on Tuesday, February 23rd at 11:30 a.m.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce will host its annual Salute to Local Heroes dinner on February 24th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. in Mission Valley. The Mardi Gras-themed event honors heroic actions by members of the La Mesa Police and Fire Department, as well as community volunteers, and the evening includes a silent auction and raffle prizes, too. For tickets and details, you can visit lamesachamber.com.
Dominic Shaner, composer of Heresy of the Free Spirit, will exhibit his mastery of the lute in a concert at Cuyamaca College on Thursday, February 25th at 7:30 p.m. For more information, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
Paving the Way, a celebration of Black history, will feature musical performances, theater, dance, politics, and more.
This event will be held at Cuyamaca College on Friday, February 26th at 7:30 p.m., directed by Robert Chambers. For more details, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
Arg! A run and walk at Pirate's Cove along the shores of Lake Cuyamaca is set to begin on Friday, March 4th. This unique event includes both a 12-hour and a 24-hour option, with the 24-hour portion kicking off at 8 a.m. and a 12-hour all-night run and walk starting off at 8 p.m. All entrants will receive a t-shirt, hat, and other swag with a Pirate's Cove logo. Winners will receive pirate buckles, awards, and you can also win a prize for the best pirate costume. For more information, visit sdpiratescove12-24.com.
Yeehaw! Country music greats Larry Gatlin and the Gatlin Brothers will be performing in concert at Saquon's Live and Up Close Theater on Saturday, March 12th at 8 p.m. Grammy award-winning Larry Gatlin has written hit songs for many famous musical stars through the years, including Elvis Presley, Glen Campbell, and Johnny Cash. For tickets, you can visit saquon.com.
Registration is now open for East County's St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon 5K Fun Run and Walk, Green Mile and Tribes and Clans Competition, which will be held this year on Saturday, March 12th, the weekend before St. Patrick's Day. This event aims to involve the entire family in fun and fitness. The Green Mile Fun Run is an enjoyable short-distance non-competitive event is also available. The Green Mile Fun Run, an enjoyable short-distance non-competitive event, is also available. The event will also feature a finish line festival, health and wellness fair, and craft beer invitational. Participants are encouraged to wear green and vie for prizes for best costumes. Funds raised will benefit several East County charities. This event is hosted by the Run East County Foundation. To register, volunteer, or get more information, you can visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
Over 60 artists will exhibit their works at the Circle of Art Show in Borrego Springs on Saturday and Sunday, March 12th and 13th. The artists work in a variety of media, including fine arts, oils and watercolors, photography, sculpture, pottery, ceramics, jewelry, fabric art, and more. This two-day show includes music, food, and free admission. The event will be held on Christmas Tree Circle in the heart of Borrego Springs. For more information, you can visit circle-of-art.org or visit our calendar on East County Magazine.
The Barona Cultural Museum is offering classes on Native American culture and crafts, including a Native foods cooking class with yucca on March 12th and more. All classes are from 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The Barona Cultural Center and Museum is located on the Barona Indian Reservation in Lakeside. For more information, see baronamuseum.org.
The Water Conservation Garden invites the public to its first annual WaterWise Home Garden Tour on Saturday, March 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The self-guided tour will highlight a variety of five beautiful gardens located in El Cajon, La Mesa, and Rancho San Diego, utilizing an array of color, variety, and low water usage. You can learn about using native, succulent, cacti, and Mediterranean plants, and see how you can design your yard for low water usage. The gardens emphasize plants from semi-arid regions around the world. Succulent cuttings from many of the home tours will be on sale, as well as other garden and home items such as birdhouses, pottery, and garden jewelry, all handmade by local artisans. The garden's director of horticulture will also be available to talk about how to redesign your landscape to use low water usage plants. For tickets and more information, you can visit thegarden.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, Get trained to be a citizen journalist and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. And listeners, we have a treat for you today. My very special guest is Victor Crosswaite Contreras. Victor is with the Descendants of Early San Diego, formerly known as the Old Town San Diego Descendants Group, and he is going to be telling us about a contest for writing short historical monologues for presentation at the upcoming Twain Fest, and he'll also be giving us a dramatic reading a little later in the show. Victor, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, Marian.
So tell us what Twain Fest is all about, for those not familiar with it.
Twain Fest was born from the organization Write Out Loud, which is a theater group dedicated to the reading of literature and the performance of literature. So Write Out Loud kind of plays into that. And they created a celebration of 1800 literature. The literature from the 1800s, and dedicated it to probably the most famous writer of that time, Twain, Mark Twain.
Right.
So they call it Twain Fest. They've worked in conjunction with Old Town San Diego State Park and housing the event in the Old Town area, so it's not limited to the state park, but it focuses in the state park, but it takes in the whole Old Town San Diego area. And they celebrate literature of the 1800s. They do reenactments of characters, of the authors. Mm-hmm. They do readings of the writings that they did. They'll have a number of activities and games that are the 1800s, music, dancing. It's an entire event that encompasses the whole Old Town area, comes alive for the 1800s on August the 20th this year.
Very exciting. Now, as part of that, the Descendants of Early San Diego and Write Out Loud are sponsoring a contest for writing short monologues that'll be presented at Twain Fest. And the kicker is they have to tell the real story of real people who were here in the San Diego region back in the 1800s. And I presume that could include the entire county, including East County. Correct, Victor?
More than that, we encompass what we consider the San Diego region. Mm-hmm. Now, remember back then, it started in Spain.
And
yes. Spain formed a mission here in San Diego. So the mission was central to the region, which would include Baja California as well. Baja California, East County, and all the way probably halfway toward Los Angeles.
Well, that's very good to know. So tell us a little bit about the basic rules, when the deadline is, how long the pieces need to be, and anything else folks should know.
We're looking for performance pieces that can be performed as a monologue, characterizing a person that actually lived in this region during the 1800s. They'd like a little bit of his story, so we're telling factual historical truths about what that person's mm-hmm. life was like, what brought him to San Diego, aspects of his life that would be of interest, and something about life of the 1800s. What was it like to live in the 1800s? 5 to 10 minute monologue that would be performed by a professional actor at Twain Fest for the public multiple times during the day, maybe 4 or 5 times during the day. It would be repeated throughout the day. The Twain Fest starts from 11 in the morning and runs till 5 in the afternoon.
And the deadline for submitting your entry would be May 31st.
May 31st, you're submitting either online at viccroscon@yahoo.com or mailing it at 110 North 2nd Avenue, Unit 65, Chula Vista, California, 91910. For additional information, they can call, and the number to call is 619-301-301. 8126.
Very good. And listeners, if you missed that, you can go to eastcountymagazine.org, click on our bookshelf section, and if you scroll down, there's an article about the playwright contest, the Descendants of Early San Diego contest in there as well, with all of these details and more. Now, what do the winners get?
The winners of this competition, we're suggesting they submit their 5 to 10 minute monologues, and we're looking to select two pieces that will be compensated $100 each.
Very nice. And they'll also be performed at Twain Fest. And I will add, by the way, we're East County Magazine. We love our East County history. If one of the winners happens to be about someone who lived in East County during the 1800s, we would be delighted to have that performed at an upcoming East County Magazine event as well, if the playwright wants to do that, wants the extra exposure.
That'd be wonderful. We'd certainly be in favor of that.
Okay. Now, tell us a little bit about some of the kinds of stories that have been brought to life before. And I will add, I've seen some of these performed, and they're just marvelous. They have humor and a lot of history, but it's really in a very entertaining fashion. You're not going to be bored, folks. If you go to Twain Fest, you're going to love
Absolutely
it.
Absolutely not.
But tell us a couple of examples of some of the stories that have been featured in the past.
Well, one of the things that's kind of interest is both in Mexico and the United States at that time, it had a much stricter code of behavior, and women were not allowed to gamble or go into drinking establishments. Yet in California, we were much more liberal, and we allowed the women to gamble and go.
We were liberal even back then.
We were liberal even back then, so that it was very common to have women gamble. So one of our pieces depicted a woman who lived here in the 1800s, actually passed through here. She had relatives in San Diego, and she talks about gambling and about women gambling, which was very unusual at that time,
yeah,
but very acceptable here. We talked about the toys of the 1800s. Barzolo is a Italian toy maker who was born in Italy, who came to the East Coast and eventually to San Diego to sell handmade toys. And he talks about the toys and the playing of the children of that time.
Very interesting. I know another one was about how the flag was saved during the transition from Spain to Mexico controlling California. And that was interesting, too, as I recall. It was a woman that sort of hid it under her skirt, thinking that was the one place that the soldiers wouldn't search, that they
Absolutely.
Could be gentlemen.
So there's all these wonderful stories, very much part of our history and sometimes overlooked. And some of the wonderful stories, I mean, San Diego's filled with just rich, wonderful stories.
Yeah. Now, you have some famous ancestors yourself as a descendant of early San Diego there. One of them was Bonifacio Lopez. Tell us about Señor Lopez, and then we're going to have you do a reading in a moment.
Well, the cattle industry was the king at that time in the 1800s. And generally speaking, the Spanish soldiers retired. They started cattle ranches and exported cattle all around the world. And it was really a part of the major world economy. It provided leather throughout the world. Basically, cattle was raised for leather instead of for beef because of the lack of refrigeration. You couldn't transport or keep the meat for very long.
Good point. You can only eat so much beef jerky.
There's only so much that you can want to do. So although we knew that the cattle industry was big here, there's a lot of misconceptions about it. One of the things is that Native Americans were very, very, very much a part of the cattle industry and were actually many times the cowboys. It wasn't the cowboys against the Indians. The Indians were the cowboys in many cases.
Fascinating. Well, that is all very, very interesting, Victor. And without further ado, listeners, we're going to have Victor Crosswhite Contreras do his dramatic reading about his famous ancestor, Bonifacio Lopez.
Bienvenidos, bienvenidos. Welcome, welcome. I understand that perhaps some of you may be interested in some ganado, some cattle. You see, if anybody's interested in cattle, you may be directed to me. You see, I'm known as El Rey. Okay, I'm not really royalty or anything like that. It's not really a king. It's, como se dice, an honorary title. A title she given to me by my people of San Diego for the years of service my family has given to mi pueblo de San Diego. You see, my grandfather, he was a Spanish soldier that came with Father Serra to start the missions up and down California. This is true. And like many of the Spanish soldiers, when they retire, they were given plots of land. My grandfather, he was the first to retire from the Presidio in San Diego and was given land off the northwest side of the Presidio and down into the valley. There was a corral that serviced the animals that took care of the Presidio, therefore was in service to the King of Spain and called El Corral del Rey. Now the corral is in service to me, so therefore I'm El Rey. I'm well known in my Californias because of my love for fandangos. Fandangos are, como se dice, fiestas, celebrations. Celebrations that may take place for several days. You see, the Spanish soldiers up and down the missions, they all know each other. And whenever there's a birthday or a wedding or a fiesta, they travel sometimes days to go to a fandango. If you're going to travel this far, you're going to make it worth your while. So you stay for many days at a time. And it was at a fandango at La Misión de San Gabriel. I believe it was a quinceañera. Anyway, the second night of the fiesta, across the dance floor, I see a beautiful woman. She flirts with me behind her fan. I cross the dance floor. I ask her to dance. And from that first dance, we stay together the whole night. We dance, we sing, we walk, we talk. I begin to court her. And pretty soon, I make her my wife. And I bring her to my pueblo de San Diego, there to show off my beautiful bride. You see, it's not beyond me to show off a little. You see, I take my horse. I charge up the canyon wall. I rear up on its hind legs and charge back down again. Not an easy task for a man my size. Therefore, I have gained the respect of my fellow Californianos, such that they have named me El Juez del Campo. El Juez del Campo is a judge of the camp. You see, we mark each of our animals with a brand on its hide, so as to know to whom each animal belongs. But you cannot brand a calf. A calf, she's too small. As she grow, it stretch out the brand beyond recognition. So you must wait a year or two for the calf to be sufficiently big to handle the brand. But many things can happen in a year. Calf gets separated from its mother. Herds get mixed together. Many things can happen. So you need El Juez del Campo to help resolve property disputes. Especially at the Matazón. El Matazón is where we select the animals to be sold. But we do not sell for carne, for beef. We sell for hides and tallow. And we use the hides and tallow to trade all around the world. So much so that the Norte Americanos, they call our hides California banknotes. And we use them to trade all over. And this working cattle, she is a dangerous business. More vaqueros have been killed riding horses and herding cattle than were ever shot up in the nickel and dime novels that are so popular back east. This is true. So every vaquero has his story. You heard the vaquero up north who was at the Matazón and he roped the becerro. The becerro fell the other way and snapped his riata. His riata came flying back and boom! Le sacó el ojo. He became One-Eyed Juan. I too have my stories. Why, this summer, you know how hot it got this summer. Well, I was bringing down some cattle to the water down there by the river. And up on the hillside, I see a brown and white on a ridge. So I take my horse and I bring the brown and white down the hill. She circle around behind this bush. So a second time I go up to get the cow and bring her down. She circle around again to the bush. A third time I go up. But this time I get off my horse to see why this cow she looks so much into the bush. I push around the bush. And there in the bush, it's a calf. She's no go away because the calf is there. So her calf, she is hurt and stuck in the branches. I cut away the branches. I pick up the calf. I turn. Brown and white is pointing its horns right at my belly. If she run me through, I cannot do nothing. Nobody know I'm there. I surely die. But she look at me, and I look at her. She know I no hurt her calf. She let me walk by. I carry the calf, and I get on my horse. She come by and sniff the calf and follow me down the hill like a puppy dog. If you have any questions about mi pueblo de San Diego, you ask for me, El Rey. My name, Bonifacio López.
Bravo, that was marvelous, Victor. Listeners, I should add that the piece was not only performed by Victor, but also written by him.
Yes. We want to give the authors the opportunity, if they would like to perform their piece, they'll have an opportunity to audition to perform their piece. So that's an added incentive if somebody wants to perform their own piece. We've done this kind of work before. Mm-hmm. We love telling the history and the stories of San Diego through theatrical representations. And we've done that on and off in the park for many years for different events. This particular event tying in with the literature of the 1800s and the fabulous work that Write Out Loud does in organizing this activity and getting many other organizations throughout San Diego to participate and get involved is just a wonderful way to celebrate the history of San Diego, celebrate literature of the times, and celebrate our hometown.
Yes, it's truly a great project, a wonderful way to support the arts and literature in San Diego. And I might add, listeners, that in addition to the $100 prize for the 2 one-act plays or monologues that are chosen as winners, if you're chosen to read your own work, you have some acting ability there. You can also pick up another $125 for that, I understand.
Yes, the performers are paid $125 for performing.
Yeah, so wonderful way to get some marvelous experience and hopefully, most important of all, bring to life some of these wonderful stories of the past that really can just go forgotten into the dustbin of history if we don't keep them alive.
Yeah, and there's so many aspects of our history that we sometimes forget or are not aware of. For example, the tanneries of the 1800s. Obviously, the tanneries were vital and crucial to the economy and to the processing of the hides. Most people would presume that Native Americans or Mexicans were the people that were tanning the hides, but this wasn't true. Mm-hmm. Pacific Islanders were the ones that were working the tanneries.
Yeah.
And actually cleaned the hides and prepared hides to be transported all around the world.
Yeah. Well, we certainly have a very rich history here in East County in the 1800s. The Native American tribes, of course, that were the first early Californians here, and the Mexican rancheros out here. I know that out in Campo, they had a gunfight that lasted longer and killed more people than the OK Corral, but who ever heard of it until somebody wrote a book about it a couple of years ago. We could go on and on to the gold mining that went on up in Julian during the 1800s. And even out here in El Cajon, they had the Chase Gold Mine. A lot of people don't know. Horse racing down Main Street in the early days of El Cajon before it became a city, and they outlawed vice like that. So there's a lot of rich stories to draw on right here as well as throughout our region.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a wonderful history. It's a wonderful place. There's a reason why so many people migrated to our California and state.
Yeah. And if people want to get involved with the Old Town Early Descendants group of Victor, where can they get more information about that? Maybe somebody here has a famous ancestor and wants to know how to learn more.
We do workshops 4 times a year, and haven't been scheduled for this year, but you can go to the Descendants website, which is DESDSTORY.com.
So it stands for Descendants of Early
Descendants
San Diego.
DESDSTORY.com.
Yeah, DESDSTORY.com. Tell us once again, if people want to enter the historical monologue contest to bring a local story from the 1800s to life and have an opportunity to have it performed at Twain Fest on August 20th.
The deadline will be May 31st.
Mm-hmm.
The winners will be announced at our annual Descendants Luncheon. We have a gathering every year where people that are descendants of people that lived here in the 1700s and 1800s gather every year on the last weekend in June. So the last weekend in June, we will be celebrating the Descendants Luncheon, which is June 24th through June 26th. And that's when the winners will be announced.
Very good. And one last time, the phone number where they can call you, Victor, for entry details is
619-301 8126.
Very good. And you can also go to eastcountymagazine.org, click on our bookshelf section, and you'll find entry information on the contest right there. And we'll also be posting an audio of this interview there as well. Victor, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Heart attack is the leading cause of death in the nation, but not in San Diego. In the United States, about 610,000 people die of heart disease every year. One of every four deaths, and another 130,000 die because of stroke, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Locally, heart disease fatalities have dropped in the past few years and are now the second leading cause of death in the region. Stroke deaths have also experienced a slight decline. In 2013, a total of 4,831 people died from diseases of the heart and another 1,114 from stroke, the fifth leading cause of death in San Diego. High blood pressure and cholesterol levels and diabetes increase a person's risk of heart disease and stroke, says Wilma Wooten, the county public health officer. You can help prevent these and other chronic diseases by eating healthy, exercising on a regular basis, and managing any medical conditions you may have. In San Diego County, cancer is the number one killer. Locally, there are three behaviors: poor nutrition, lack of physical activity, tobacco and substance abuse that lead to four chronic diseases: cancer, heart disease, and stroke. Type 2 diabetes and lung disease. Combined, these diseases cause more than 50% of deaths in the region. So what are the warning signs of a heart attack and stroke, and what should you do if you or someone you know is experiencing them? Well, when it comes to a heart attack and stroke, every second counts. Wooten added, people should call 911 immediately. It can be a matter of life or death. Here are the warning signs of a heart attack. In most cases, discomfort occurs in the center of the chest that lasts more than a few minutes. Discomfort should go away and come back. It can feel like uncomfortable pressure, squeezing, fullness, or pain. Symptoms of a heart attack can include pain or discomfort in one or both arms, the back, neck, jaw, or stomach. Shortness of breath, with or without chest discomfort, can also be a sign of a heart attack. So can breaking out in a cold sweat, nausea, or lightheadedness. In addition to learning the signs and symptoms of a heart attack, it is important to also learn cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR, a life-saving technique used when someone's breathing or heartbeat has stopped. If you or someone near you is having a stroke, it is extremely important that you act fast and call 911 immediately. FAST is an easy way to remember the sudden signs of stroke and stands for face. Is the side of the face droopy or is it numb? Is the smile uneven? Arm and leg. Is there weakness, numbness, difficulty walking? Speech. Is there a slurred speech? Does a person have difficulty speaking? Time is critical. If you notice any of these symptoms, call 911 immediately. Knowing the risks and signs of a stroke can make the difference between life and death. For more information about heart disease and stroke, visit the American Heart Association or the CDC website. This has been Leon Thompson with the Health Report on East County Magazine.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.